Well, I like to take the next 2 or 3 hours, if it's okay. Spend a little time building you moms up, so just sit back and relax for a little while, and I promise you, you won't be bored. I want to say something before I begin today, because I want to make sure that you take me serious. What I'm saying today, and the reason I'm saying it, is not just because this is what pastors are supposed to do on Mother's Day. It's something I mean, it's something I really feel strongly about. I'll make some statements today that probably will seem very strong. Some of you may think, oh, he's just exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. I really mean the things I'm saying to you this morning, particularly as they relate to motherhood. I believe, this is the first statement, I believe mothers are the most important people in the world. I don't believe there's anyone more important in an individual's life than their mother. The two most influential people in my life have both been mothers. The one I spent the first 20 years with and the one I spent the last 13 years with. They have both influenced my life in ways that I could never recount here this morning. I am what I am today primarily because of my mother's influence. Her love, her concern, and now the mother I live with now. As she mothers our children, as I observe her life. I have the utmost and highest respect for moms. Quite frankly, I think they have an extraordinary work ethic. Mine doesn't even compare to what I watch mothers go through every day, all the time, nonstop. I remember when we first got married, my wife and I, and we decided our plan was to have kids right away. We wanted to just start a family right away, start having babies. So 2 weeks after we got married, my wife conceives. Now, as Mary was sharing earlier, it's very interesting what people don't tell you about marriage and having babies. I just kind of thought, you know, when you're young and you're newlywed, there's all that passion. Well, conception did something to all that passion. I'm not sure what, but you might say it killed it. Okay? It's like, well, Mark, boy, I'm tired. She was tired. This baby immediately starts taking from you. You don't have to wait, as you mothers all know. You don't wait till the baby's out to start giving. Inside, this baby starts drawing on all of your life energies. Your body starts to change in ways you can't even help it. Your emotions go up and down. Some days you feel really good, some days you don't. One day you love the smell of bacon or coffee, and the next day it's no more for the next 6 months. It's going to make you throw up if you smell it. All of a sudden, you know, your husband never had bad breath before, and now it's like, oh my gosh, don't even kiss me. And you can use Sculp till you're blue in the face. It isn't going to do anything, you know, it's not going to make any difference. Because there's these things going on inside of her that are just non-stoppable. It's that child, it's that creativity that's going on inside the womb. And then, you know, it's real precious in the beginning because the wife, she loves just, you know, watching her little tummy grow because it's little. And then it's monstrous. And she's kind of waddling around the house, you know, and bumping in, you try to slide by people and your stomach brushes them. You know, your body goes through these changes, and some of them aren't too thrilling. And then you're in that last month, that ninth month, and I remember this, my wife, we'd been in a bad automobile accident, so her back was really bothering her very bad. And there was no position that was ever right. I mean, we had a water bed, but it didn't work. I didn't even sleep with her, I mean, because I moved too much. And every time I moved, the bed goes... Blah, blah, blah. So I'd sleep out on the couch so she could try to get some rest, and she'd be up all night, go to the bathroom 4 or 5 or 6 times. You know, every time you drive another, stop the car, go to the bathroom. The baby's here, it's there, it's moving all around. And then you're just dying to get that baby out. It's like, let's get this baby out. Well, our first one, I remember as Mary was sharing the story this morning, I kind of chuckled because it's really easy, you know, as a dad to think back there, gee whiz, Brent, you know, boy, I would have never made my wife walk to the hospital. Except I thought, well, if I'm going to say that, I better be honest about what I did with our first one. We were cooks at a sorority at that time, my wife and I. We lived in the sorority. She's expecting our first baby now. I am a boxing fanatic, all right? Just happened. Now, you see, we had to have a cesarean with our first child, so we were really supposed to go in before labor even happened. But, be that as it may, I was engrossed in the fights. because they don't put them on TV very often. And it was someone I think it was Roberto Duran was fighting that particular day. And it was like the eighth round. There was seven more to go. So my wife's at the top of the steps, Mark, we really need to go. Honey, come on, there's only eight rounds. There's only like 3 minutes a round. You know, and you know what we're going to do is sit in the hospital anyway. You remember our class? This has got to go on a while. Just let the pain happen. It's got to happen. Just sit down, relax a little bit. You know, take it easy, and the fight will be over pretty soon. So, just my wonderful wife, she's like, okay, so she's sitting back there. Pretty soon, Mark, it's about the 10th round now. I'm going to die. I feel like I'm going to die. We have got to get to the hospital. Oh, all right, the sacrifices I make for this kid, you know. It's like, again, so up the stairs I go. We get into the car, and we get there, and Satcher says, well, you better wait out here while we get your wife ready. Oh, why can't I go? Well, I don't know if you'll want to. So I was standing in the hall and realized when he pulled out a needle this long to give my wife a spinal that he was right. I didn't want to be there. She jabs this thing in, boom, and it numbs you, see, but you can stay awake then during birth, during labor. And so anyway, my wife's laying there and, you know, I kind of, you know, you want to soothe them and touch them and well, I'll get into that in the other labors in a minute because we went through some others. So we're sitting there and I'm wondering, what am I supposed to do? You know, what do dads do, especially with a cesarean? So I'm kind of sitting there talking to my wife and I'm sitting on this stool and there's this drape between us and the doctor. I thought, wow, I wonder what's on the other side. Oh man, wrong move. So I stand up, it's like, oh my gosh. My wife's like stomach is outside of her stomach, see? Where they can work on it, taking the baby out. And it's the umbilical cord. You know, all the doctors, and so they always go, would you like to cut it? I say, well, you know, that's what you're paid for, sir. You know, I made him. You cut the cord. I don't want to cut the cord. It's my kid in there. And it looks like a telephone cord. It's all bluish, and it's yuck. So, and here's my wife, you know, she's going through this, and my wife's looking up at me, and I got as white as, you know, a sheet. And the doctor looks at me, he starts swearing at me, he says, blankety blank, sit down, I don't want to sew up your split open head after you've fallen on the pavement while I'm sewing up your wife, too. And I said, oh, yeah. And I couldn't breathe, you know, I'm, this is terrible, man, this is awful. So I'm sitting there, I said, oh, the baby's beautiful, the baby's beautiful. So then, I didn't watch this. They take this big staple gun, and they staple your stomach together. That's what they do. Plus, they put stitches in there. So they wheel her out, and she was in an awful lot of pain. So I was holding the baby, and this is really neat, you know, the baby. Then my wife's in the hospital for about, I think, 4 days this particular time. And she had an infection in the incision, and then she'd have to try to sit and nurse the baby at the same time, and it was excruciating pain. I'd be sitting there, you know, watching tears roll down her eyes. Because my wife has a very high tolerance for pain anyway, so I knew this is really, really, really hurting her. And nothing I could do. And then we brought the baby home, I remember that, and we didn't have anyone who could come really help us because our families were all in other states. And it's my wife here. I didn't have any vacation time, and I didn't have a job like that in those days. Didn't have no vacation. You just worked and come home, and there'd be my wife, you know, and in pain. And I remember a couple months after we had our first baby, and her breasts got really, really sore and dry and cracked, and it felt like she was on fire. And she'd be sitting there nursing the baby, tears down her eyes. She'd get up in the middle of the night, nurse the baby, take care of this baby, and it went on and on and on. And I remember one time we were getting ready to go to some meeting, and she was in changing the baby, and diarrhea all over the front of her dress. I said, I'm so glad that I'm not a mother. I'm so glad for this. You know, and I just watched her day after day after day, and now we've been through this 4 times. And I remember when we went in to have our second child, you know, the last three were natural birth. And in fact, many of the doctors were amazed Kathy did it. Said, you know, you're kind of a pioneer because in those days were 13 years ago, they did not recommend that you did this after cesarean. So I remember with our son, Kathy, you know, labor's coming along good, and it's very intense pain. Little word to the wise, guys, just stay out of her face. Just stay out of her face. Don't touch me. Just back off. So I said, okay, honey, whatever you want me to do. So It was like, well, you know, rubber back till I got cramps in my hand, you know. And then in between when it's, you know, calm, I'm rubbing my hand, get it ready to go again, you know. So then she's pushing. And with Jeremy, she had to push for 2 hours. And we're talking about endurance. It's unbelievable. She's pushing, pushing. Oh, I almost wanted to laugh. It was so funny. But that would have been very insensitive. And all the blood vessels, the little capillaries, are broken. Next thing I knew, it looks like she's got the measles. Because so much intensity and pressure. Get this baby out. The doctor, he'd come in and out, and it didn't seem to be making any progress. And finally, the fetal heart monitor, boom, it dropped. And what had happened was his little cord, Jeremy's cord, was caught around his neck. Doc says, get her in quick. And Kathy goes, wait, one more time. I think I can get him out. And out comes the baby. And I've watched her year after year after year take care of these children. My last little child, he is more than all the other three put together. Okay? Someone told my wife when she was expecting, she says, you know, I really think there's a mark in there. Don't say that. Don't say that. That's what happened. There's a mark in there. There's a mark. When I was 3 years old, I would climb on top of garages. I mean, I'd climb on a roof. I could get up, but I couldn't get down. My mom would have to come and get me. This is my fourth child is like. You know, he's the only one in the family broke his leg. He sees a big hole. Yeah! Ah, one broken leg. You know, and of course, like Mary said, I wasn't there. My wife was there. Going to the hospital with him, taking him. And she calls me and goes, Mark, I think it's broke. Ah, oh, no, it ain't broke. Man. No darlings have ever broken anything. We're tough. We're strong. And I just think it's nothing. No, the x-rays, it's broken. So he gets this little cast. The other day, we're out riding. We're out a little family ride, Kathy and Mike and I together. Everything's going great, you know, until we lose sight of Mom. Dad, Dad, where's Mom? Mom! My God, Dad's right here. I'm right here, son. I don't want you, Mom! Where's Mom? I want Mom! Micah, we're riding out under the airplanes, you know, where, vroom! I said, Mike, I can't hear you! Mom, I want Mom! Where's Mom? Finally, Kathy turns around and, Kathy, don't ever do that again. This kid wants you! He don't want me! You know, you don't want to take me for nothing. First thing in the morning when he gets up, Mom! Hi, Mom. Hi, Mommy. Go and lay on Mom. And I just wish he'd lay on me for 5 minutes. He'll stay there for 30 minutes with Mom. He loves Mom. You know, Mom, sometimes I understand it gets old. Sometimes Kathy will say, Mark, I wish sometimes you'd do, you know, that he'd want you. And I said, I do too. I do too, man. I mean, it's just an amazing thing to see the chemistry between children and their mom. She has such an unbelievable influence on that young life. And I have the utmost respect for that. I watch my wife, I mean, you mothers have probably had more cold meals than the rest of us put together. You get everybody else's meal ready, a child needs something, they need this, they need that, next thing you know, it's cold food again. And I've watched my wife go through this time and time and time again, or especially when the baby's little, and just when you sit down to eat, of course they wake up, and of course they're hungry, it just happens that way. Hundreds of diapers we've gone through, the thousands of loads of clothes that my wife has done over and over. I mean, I iron my own clothes. I even wash some. But even on top of that, it's just tons and tons of things that go one thing after another after another. I remember growing up, my mom, I was very fortunate to have the mother I had. I was very fortunate. I had a mother that prayed for me every day since I've been born. Every single day. She never missed a day. And I remember my mom, when I was about 3 years old, my father, when I was young, we lived in California, we lived in Burbank. My father was a fighter. He was a boxer and he was training. And he would take me to the track with him and we'd run the track. And he was also a welder and my mom. She was taking care of all of us. There were six kids. I was the oldest of six. But I was the first. And so, you know, yeah, you are with your first. You're so proud of your first. Well, my dad, he was not, you know, like some dads today. You know, you don't change diapers. Dads don't do that. And, they do that. I do that. But, I mean, you know, I remember this one particular time. My mom wanted to go to this church meeting. So, with the ladies. So, Dad was going to babysit. Well, Mark doo-dooed in his diapers. So, Dad, here's what he does. He takes off the diapers and puts on a pair of his underwear on me. See? And then he pins them. you know, pins him. He didn't know how to change a diaper. And then finally, he just calls my mom. You got to get home, Martha. I can't take this anymore. You got to get home. My mom leaves the meeting, comes home, takes care of me. I reflected on how many things my mother has done for me. The way she believed in me. I remember when I was 5 years old, I started kindergarten when I was five and four and a half or five. And she'd walk me to the bus station, hold my hand in my Roy Rogers lunch pail. Roy Rogers is my hero. Roy Rogers and the Lone Ranger. And I remember the school I went to had horses. It was, you know, you could go horseback riding. It was up in the mountains in California. And so I remember this one particular day, coming home without my lunch pail. My mom said, "Mark, honey, where's your lunch pail?" "Oh, Mom." I was a storyteller even then. She said, "Mom." I said, "Mama." It was sad, Mama. Horse stepped on it today. A big horse. And crushed my lunch pail, Mom. And she believed me. She's trusting. She believed me. She said, "Mark, you little liar. I ought to slap you upside the head." I said, "Really, Mark? Well, that's really too bad. Well, we'll have to get you another one." So I went on home quite proud of myself at my little lie. About 3 months later, the nurse called. Said, "Mrs. Darling, you know, we were wondering if Mark wanted his lunch pail back." She said, "Well, you know, Mark told me a horse stepped on it." She says, "Is it smashed, you mean? And maybe we just want it for, you know, a scrapbook or something?" She said, "Oh, no, no, that's not what happened. Mark threw up in his lunch pail at school. And he must have been too embarrassed to come and pick it up." She was right. I was going to pick up my lunch pail with a vomit in it. Man, that's terrible. I remember all the things I put my mom through. I remember when I was six, the neighbor kids, they had television. We didn't have a television when I was younger. And they had a television. They let me come over and watch cartoons with them, like on Saturday. And it was a house full of girls. They had all daughters. And so they had to clean every Saturday, and then they could watch cartoons. Well, I remember this one day. My family, we didn't have a whole lot of money. And this one day, they wouldn't let me in. So I pounded on the door until I broke a hole in the door. California, in those days, the doors aren't very thick. They're just hollow core doors. I kept pounding, pounding, "Let me in! Let me in!" I pounded a hole in their door. That didn't go over real well with the family, you know. And my mom and dad, they didn't desert me. They stood by me. I think all the humiliating things I put my mom through. I think all the times I watched my mom. I remember as a young boy, I especially remember this when I got to about the sixth grade. You know how you are? You just, "Mom, I love you a billion zillion. I love you this much. You're the neatest mom in the whole world." Except I never wanted her to show up at school. Because I was embarrassed by the way my mom dressed. See, other kids' moms, you know, they had the cool jeans and the cool clothes, but not my mom. My mom didn't have it because, well, my mom gave up what she could have so we'd have clothes to go to school in. And I was embarrassed by that. I think about all the things my mom did. I think about the houses we lived in growing up. Six kids and all of us sharing rooms. And my mom, you know, using appliances that were half broken down. And you know, my dad, they were doing the best they could. I remember when I was about 9 years old, Mom decided to start this good news club. She wanted me to invite all my friends over to the Darling house on the way home because our house was on the way home from school. She'd bring all these kids. You know, if six wasn't enough, she'd fill the room with 30 kids. Didn't care about the carpet or nothing. She'd get those kids around. We'd have our little club and we'd sing our little songs about Jesus. And she'd do this little flannel board thing for us. And you know, it's amazing. I remember, just like many of you parents here today, I don't remember this. My mother tells me about this. My mother dedicated, my mom and dad dedicated me when I was very small to go into full-time Christian service. And little did my mother ever dream of the pain that was going to come into her life because of me. And I remember as I got older, is that about 15 and 16? I remember the arguments, the intense arguments I used to have with my mom, the intense disrespect. I wouldn't do a thing around the house. She couldn't make me do it. I wasn't going to do it. And I remember finally just deciding, "I'm not going to church either, Mom." And I remember she'd always be, you know, singing around the house. She'd be reading her Bible or she'd be telling me how God was faithful. She was always there for me. Always home when I had something difficult, but I wasn't there for her. And I remember when I got into those 16, 17, 18, I despised her. I didn't want anything to do with my mom. I didn't want anything to do with her religion. And I thought my mom was old, fuddy-dud, old woman. I don't want anything to do with her. You never dream. You know, I think about this now as a parent. And I look at my kids and I think, one day, I pray to God that I don't go through the emotional pain with them that my mom went through with me. Because she loved me and she stuck by me and hung in there with me when I would humiliate her, embarrass her. I'll never, never forget the day I graduated from high school when you think it would be a great day of pride for a parent. And I have one picture at home of my graduation. And my mom's right beside me and you can see the pain in her face. Her son's hair, ratty and gnarly, half-grown beard all over the place, ripped clothes. I was a rebel, man. I was an absolute rebel. Anything that was wholesome and good, I despised. And anything that was wild and rebellious, I loved. And it pained my mom, and she would try to tell me, Mark, don't do this. Don't do this, son. You're going to pay a price. And how I wish to God now I would have listened to my mom. But I didn't. The day after I graduated, the morning after, I put on my backpack and I walked out the door. I never said goodbye to her. I never told her I'd be back. But I said goodbye to my dad. You know why? Because my dad was a macho rebel himself. And I thought that was cool. And all the pain that I watched my mom go through. After all that she'd done, all these 18 years that she had given to me every single day of her life, without ever question, without ever saying, Mark, you know, she never even said, I wish I never had you. And really, I deserve that. I really deserve that. She never did. She'd make my bed. She'd iron the clothes if they needed ironing. She'd stand up for me if I needed to be stood up for. And she would try to encourage me when I needed encouragement. But I never did her. And I remember taking off. She didn't know, you know, the pain of your son leaving who, you see, in your parents' eye, you may not understand this to your parent, I do now, they're always a kid. They're always your kid. And I think in 6 years, my little baby girl will be off in college or maybe married. That blows my mind. I'm a young person, I think, to myself. I'm going to have a daughter, 18 years old. That's how our parents look at us. They're babies. They labored for you, cared for you, took care of you. And what have we given back? Often, but disrespect and dishonor and harsh words and harsh things said and an intense lack of gratitude. That was me. And I remember leaving and wandering the countryside. And God began working in my life. And the most important decision I ever made in my life is my relationship with Christ. But the second most important decision that has changed my life, and I want to share this with you today, it will change many of your lives today if you obey it, was this. The Bible says, honor your father and mother that it may go well with you and that you may live a long, healthy life on the earth. I am convinced today, as I have grown older and as I have observed life and observed people, that many people today have cancer, high blood pressure, gallbladder problems, migraine headaches, backaches, health problems, and many have died prematurely because they have dishonored their mothers. Because they have a bitterness and an intense resentment and a lack of forgiveness, and they dishonor the very individual who created them and gave them life, and that was the mother. The Bible says that the individual who despises their father and mother, the ravens of the field will pluck your eyes out. Now, does God mean that literally? When's the last time you've seen birds plucking somebody's eyes out? Of course it doesn't mean that literally. What God is saying is that your eye is what you see life with. It's the purity with which you see and enjoy life. You will be robbed of your ability to enjoy life because you dishonor your mother. Your father's well, but today I'm talking about your mother's. And I remember going home And I, at the time, I was living back home. And I remember this decision had taken place on the weekend. My decision to follow Christ. I remember getting up out of bed at 8 that morning. I was down brushing my teeth. It was very unusual for me to get up that early. I hadn't been in church with my mom in 5 years. And I got up and put on my clothes. And I went upstairs and I was sitting at the kitchen table. And my mom came in the kitchen and she kind of looked at me. She said, "Well, you're up early this morning." I said, "Yeah." "Yeah, I couldn't sleep." She said, "Well, you're all dressed up too." I said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm all dressed up too." She said, "Well, what are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I thought I'd come to church with you today." And she just started to cry. I said, "You know, Mom, I really owe you a tremendous apology for the way I've treated you and the disrespect that I've had for you. And I want to ask you to forgive me. I don't know if you can, but I want to ask you to forgive me." Most of us men and women, we owe our moms and dads that. We owe our mother that, especially. So much disrespect. So much anger. And most of it, for most of us, some of us it's not, but for most of us, our mothers didn't cause us that. We did. It's our own rebellion. It's our own bitterness. It's our own hatred. And you know, that was a turning point in my life. Probably one of the greatest turning points in my life. Because it began to bring me into harmony with not only my mom, but with God. And I look at my life today, and sometimes when I'm out alone, I'm overwhelmed with how blessed my life is. I'm overwhelmed with how great my life is. Did you know that the Bible says, "Honor your father and mother, that it may go well with you, and that you may live a long life on the earth"? This is the first commandment with the promise. Did you know the first commandment of the Bible is, "Honor the Lord your God, love Him with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself"? But you know there's no promise with that? Did you think the most important person in the world you ought to honor is God? And certainly it ought to say that if you honor God, you'll live long. It doesn't say that. The first commandment with the promise is a relationship to your parents, to your mom. The greatest gift you could give your mother today, on Mother's Day and every day, is your undying respect, your honor, your value, your appreciation. Maybe you need to pick up the phone today. You know, I think one of the greatest tragedies in America today, and I hope you take this right, is Hallmark cards. Because most people let somebody who they don't even know say something that you should be saying yourself. At least add something yourself to the card. When was the last time, really, you just went on and on and on with your mom? I mean, you know, I remember arguing with my mom for at least 30 minutes. Maybe you could try 15 minutes of praise. Maybe you could try, you know, "Mom, I want you to sit down because you have to take what I'm going to tell you. You won't believe it." But I was at church this morning, and to be honest, I realized I've never given you the honor that you're due. All the times you took care of me, this snotty-nosed little kid. When I did things wrong, you stood up for me. When I did things wrong, you tried to discipline me. You tried to mold me. You did the best you could. "Mom, I really appreciate it, because if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have life." Let me tell you something. If anything we learn from society today, it's this. Without moms, most dads aren't ever going to take care of their kids. You know what I'm saying? It's a fact. It is a fact. Mothers have become, and are in a sense, a bedrock of the family. We need fathers, and you come on Father's Day and you'll hear about that. Okay? But the day's for moms. I am amazed at what mothers are going through today, what they've been going through for years. And I want you moms here to know today that you have my undying respect and devotion and honor. And I want to encourage you today to give yourself the due and the honor that's really due you. Because as a society, we don't. As a society, we really devalue motherhood. I have a friend who just recently got married. A few years ago. Before they got married, this gal was going to college and headed for a very prestigious career. Then she fell in love. She got married. And she felt, and her husband felt together, that God had a different plan for them. He wanted to have a family. She decided not to pursue that career anymore. So people would come up to her and go, "Well, what are you going to do now?" "Well, I'm a wife." Yeah, but I mean, get serious. I mean, what are you going to do besides? Well, I was going to be a mother. That's all? That's all you're going to do is be a wife and a mother? Is there anything more relevant in life you're going to do? We have so degraded motherhood that moms, you don't even realize how extremely valuable you are. Our society is falling apart because we have denigrated motherhood. And mothers no longer feel a sense of esteem and value anymore for this tremendous life because, you see, as one man once said, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. That's the truth. Oh, that Abraham Lincoln could come and we could resurrect him with his mom and he could come and speak to you here today. This man with no education. This man whose mother devoted himself to her children and used to read him the Bible day after day. And he became one of the greatest men this country's ever had. It's all because of his mother. All because of his mother. I remember one of the most touching stories I ever saw on television was the story of Isaiah Thomas. I saw it one night, it was on at 2 in the morning, and I thought to myself, why do you guys do this? Why don't you put this on at prime time? I tried to find a copy of it. I don't know where to get a copy of it. It was the most moving story, one I've ever seen, of his mother's devotion to her children and her hard work and her undying loyalty. You know, you see all these guys, these professional athletes, and what do they always do? Mom, I love you. And, oh, yes, say hi to Dad. You see these big, tough biker guys, and they're carved in the side of their arm. Mom. When was the last time you saw someone with Dad in the side of their arm? You know, I'm sorry. You know, dads, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's Mom. There's this tremendous affinity for Mom. She's the first and most important woman in our lives. She shapes us. She molds us. I'll tell you something today. I'm here today because of my mom. My mom is influencing all of you here today. And if any good is coming to your life, I pale. It makes me very frightened to think what would have happened if my mom would not have dedicated me, if my mom would not have been devoted to me, if my mom would not have prayed for me. Not only what wouldn't have happened in my life, but for many of you through whom this church has touched your life, what would have happened? Just through one mother's devotion. Moms, I want to tell you something today. I want to tell something to you husbands, you fathers. Make sure you honor the woman you live with. Because without her, you don't have a chance. And that's the honest to God truth. She is the most priceless thing in our lives, is this mother of our children together. Take care of her. Affirm her. Praise her. Honor her. See to it that your children respect her. Because the reason I didn't respect my mom was because my dad didn't make sure that I did. And in time, he didn't either. In time, he didn't either. It's very important that we honor them, not only today, but every day of our lives. Because they keep things going. And I just praise God for every one of you moms. Some of you have been through some very severe, difficult things. Some of you have had the man you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with raising children leave you, and you're alone. Well, let me tell you this little story about my mom. My mom was married, she'd been married 37 years. Except 12 years ago, her husband left. My dad left. After all these years of total sold-out devotion my mother had to us and to him, she never worked outside the home. She was home taking care of us and taking care of the home for him. He left. And my mother's only been through the fourth grade. She had no job skills, no nothing. Not only did he leave, but he left with a second mortgage on the house. One day, the sheriff shows up and says, I'm sorry, I have to evict you from your house. Out she is, out of the house. Three kids still at home. She goes out, she finds a job. And I'd call my mom up, and it always blew my mind. I watched the pain, because my mom loved my dad. In fact, to this day, she won't divorce him. They're still not divorced. She still prays, and, Lord, you know, Mark, I don't know what God might do. Might bring him back. but he's the only man I ever loved. And I don't believe in divorce. If he wants it, he can do that. She's taken his bad debts, everything. And yet, she is one of the hallmarks in the town that I'm from. She works in this bank. And people come to the bank just to see my mom. She won't tell me this. People will tell me. Say, Mark, I'll tell you, you got the most incredible mom I've ever met. I go to the bank just to see her smile. And Mama, she didn't tell anybody this was going on. She never told anybody my dad left. She'd go into the bank every day, smiling, taking care of the customers, every single day, with her dependence on God. You may think to yourself, well, you know, I didn't have very good parents. I didn't have very good upbringing. My mom's mother died when she was 2. Her father was a mean-spirited, cruel hypocrite, in my opinion. I don't think my mother would ever say that. But I know him. And they took the children away from him. She was the youngest. He put him in an orphanage for a while. And then he remarried, got a stepmom. Stepmom didn't really care for my mom. And at 13 years old, her dad kicked her out of the house. He said, leave, go take care of yourself. That was in, I don't know, the 30s, the 40s. Going through the depression. And my mom, he'd never take his kids to the dentist. So 14 years old, working at a drugstore for peanuts without any education, she had to have all her own teeth pulled and replace them all herself. No family to go home to. And yet to this day, my mom will drive to where her father is, and she'll hold his hand. He's 95 now. Up to 5 years ago, he was still hitchhiking. It's crazy. And the things he'd say to my mom, and just one day, I finally stood up right in front of him and I said, you ever talk to my mom like that again, and you'll never come to this home again. You did not talk to my mother like this. She didn't deserve this. And my mother, you know, tears would be in her eyes because that's how she felt. Then she'd go out and get him a piece of pie and bring it into him because she was obeying God. Not because she was codependent. Not because she had some psychological problem and she wanted her father's love. She did it because she honored God. And that's left a legacy to me. Because I've asked myself, you know, I wonder what some of us are going to have happen to us when our kids are older and they've seen the way we've treated our parents. And then we'll wonder why there's no kids to come visit us in the nursing home. I wonder why our kids don't want us hanging around at their house. Maybe they're just watching us, Mom and Dad, and the way we interact with our mom. I want to tell you, no matter what you went through, no matter what, remember this. Your mother could have killed you like many are doing today. And she didn't. She kept you. And she loved you. And she nurtured you. And it cost her a lot. It cost her her time. It cost her her energy. It cost most of them their figure. It cost them their lives so that you could have life. On this Mother's Day, please remember that. For those of you here that are still involved in mothering, please don't throw in the towel. Don't get discouraged. I know there are times that you think it's not worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it. Don't give up. And don't listen to what society says when they tell you you're not worth very much if you're only a mother. Because in God's eyes and in mine, you're the most valuable and important individual in society today. Let's pray. Lord, I want to thank you this morning for the moms that are here today, for their commitment and their devotion to their children. I'm always amazed, Lord, when I go to the malls and I watch some mother who's pregnant and she's got one child in an arm and another child in a stroller and packages on the stroller and coats. And she's walking down with a smile on her face, and I can't even hardly stand to go with one child. Let alone to actually pile up things and be pregnant and not feeling well, trying to take care of a family. Lord, I just thank you so much for the moms that you've given to us. I thank you for their commitment to us, for their love. Many of them, Lord, childbirth takes a tremendous toll on the body. Mothering takes a toll on the body. And many of them bear the marks in their body today. Might we realize, Lord, that they're scars of love. that those reveal to us. Sometimes when dads get a little harsh on their wives about their weight or how they look, might we remember the marks of love and commitment and self-sacrifice that our kids might enjoy life. Thank you for each mother here today. Help each one here to go out today, Lord, and give their mother the gift of reconciliation, if need be. Help others to go out today and give their mother the gift of praise, of admiration, of honor, and deep respect. For others, Lord, maybe they need to go give their mother the gift of forgiveness. Because, Lord, not every mom is perfect. In fact, none of them are. Many were very harsh. Maybe they were very severe on us. Help us, Lord, to go home today and forgive them. To forgive them and move on in our life and to embrace them and let them know. Because I know one thing those mothers want more than anything else. They wish they could go back and do it over again. They can't. Might we free them from that regret by our forgiveness and move forward in a relationship with our mom. In Jesus' name. Amen.